No sign of freedom. 75 men from Sri Lanka are still in jail after arriving in BC 2 weeks ago. The men are being held at a Fraser Valley prison awaiting their refugee hearings. Todd Ross is a member of the Canadian Human Rights Voice. He's been trying to get the refugees released. Hi, Todd.
Hi there.
So, can you tell us why these men are being detained at the Fraser Regional Correctional Center?
Well, the reason we've been told is that because there are so many of the men who arrived on the boat about 2 weeks ago now, that they needed to put them in a separate facility. So normally they would be in the immigration center near the airport, but for this case, they're being held at the correctional facility.
Now, as you mentioned, refugee claimants don't normally get locked up in jail, so I guess what makes that necessary in this situation, from what you've heard?
Well, from what we've heard, there are concerns about who the individuals are. There are concerns that the individuals are a flight risk. And the newest argument that the government has introduced just in the last couple of days, although they've mentioned this before, is that there are concerns about security clearances. When the government has gone before the tribunals so far, the Immigration Refugee Board tribunals, they've made the argument that the men are not properly identified and that they need further time to prove their ID. And in cases where the individuals had ID with them, some of them had passports or birth certificates or other ID documents, the government has said that those documents needed to be verified, so they were sent for testing to ensure that they were authentic. The argument around whether or not the individuals were a flight risk, the government has not been using that argument as much. They did begin with that argument, but they've kind of backed off a little bit. And with the one individual who has been released so far, when the panel member made his decision, he said that whether or not the individual was a flight risk was not a concern. The individual had family in Canada. And the panel member said that he had no reason to believe that this person had any interest other than appearing before future hearings to become a Canadian citizen.
Now, have you had a chance to talk directly to any of the men?
I've not. Some of my colleagues have been able to go in as interpreters. I'm not Tamil, and I don't speak the Tamil language, so I have not been able to go in. I'm also not a lawyer. Lawyers have also been allowed to go in and meet with the individuals.
What do we know about their stories in terms of what you've heard from their lawyers or from your colleagues?
Well, it's very interesting because the perception that we hear coming from the government side is that these individuals may be a terrorist threat. What we're hearing from the individuals, though, and the stories that are emerging from the individuals is that there's a doctor in the group, there's a journalist in the group, there are engineers and other professionals, but these are individuals who, it does not sound, when you hear their stories, that they're a security risk or a security threat, but these are professionals for the most part who came to Canada. About half of them have family here in Canada. Who came to Canada to seek a better life and a life where they would escape the imprisonment that's happening in Sri Lanka now, as well as the whether that's in the open air camps or a lot of people were confined to their houses and not allowed to leave, so they were sort of under a house arrest.
That's interesting that many of them are professionals, because I think there has been a sense from the public and from the government that these men are, you know, up to no good, or somehow trying to kind of cheat the government by, say, jumping the queue on their, you know, on refugee claims, or, you know, there's no reason why they would arrive this way if they'd be able to prove legitimately that they do need refuge.
Right. And what we're also seeing from Sri Lanka and in our conversations with the government, who have been trying to work with the Sri Lanka government to to try and get some people through the regular refugee system who have family in Canada through the proper channels in Sri Lanka and through Colombo. The problem that the government has been having is that the government of Sri Lanka has not been cooperating, and the government of Canada cannot get visa officers to the northern areas where the camps are to process any claims for refugees. So where we have eager family members here in Canada who would love to sponsor refugees, their family members, to come over here, and in some cases not even family members but friends or strangers, our government has admitted that the Sri Lankan government has been blocking that process, and our government has expressed a frustration in dealing with the Sri Lankan government. What we say is that there are 76 individuals who have managed to arrive on our shore. We have an opportunity to help these 76 individuals. We're having a hard time with the other family members who are in Sri Lanka. Let's use this opportunity and welcome these people and allow them to go through a regular refugee claim. But currently they're incarcerated, and to the point that when they're being brought to the detention hearings, they're in leg irons and chains. So there's a little bit too much security around these individuals than merit.
So what do you make of the accusations or statements by the Sri Lankan government that these men are members of the Tamil Tigers?
Well, the Sri Lankan government, and most recently today, requested to come to Canada to interrogate the men, which I'm sure that our government would never allow that to happen. But the Sri Lankan government has a record of not allowing journalists access to areas, of not allowing human rights organizations access to areas, or the United Nations for that matter, unless they're escorted by guards. The Sri Lankan government is an untrustworthy source. And if the government has suggested that one individual who is on the Interpol list that was widely reported earlier, that individual would probably be sent back. The problem is that individual was put on the Interpol list by the Sri Lankan government. So there needs to be a further investigation. We cannot use the Sri Lankan government on its word. They've shown that they're not trustworthy and that they have not been able to keep their word. When we look at the camps, at the promises that they made, that these open-air detention areas, that people would be released, they're just starting to release a few people, and that's because of the pressure from Europe and India that funding will be cut. So this is not a government that we can rely on. It's not a government that we should be working with when we're trying to determine whether or not these individuals have a legitimate refugee claim. And we should be looking at independent sources that can verify whether or not these individuals are a threat, specifically the one person who was reported to Interpol.
Now, you mentioned earlier that these men are being escorted to their hearings in shackles, leg shackles and handcuffs and orange jumpsuits. Do we know how they're being treated inside the Fraser Regional Correctional Center?
The reports are that they're being fairly treated. They do have access to use the telephone, and one of the groups, the Canadian Tamil Congress, provided the individuals with phone cards so they could call family and try and arrange their documents to be sent to them. They're not able to meet in any way. They have not had any type of religious services yet, although I know that's something that the government was working on. And these are some basic things that a lot of them did not know they had a right to until their lawyers advised them of it. And admittedly, there are language barriers, although some of the individuals speak English very well. There are language barriers, but there has not been a terrible effort to advise them of all their rights. But they have not complained of any type of mistreatment.
When do you expect these men to be released?
Well, there's a hearing tomorrow that is a continuation of a hearing that started today. We could see that person being released tomorrow. I'm keeping my fingers crossed because this is a very solid case. I won't get into the details of the individual, but I can say that it's a upstanding individual with a very prominent individual who's in the group that had their hearing today and will continue on tomorrow. I believe judgment has been reserved till tomorrow. So hopefully, in this individual's case, it will be another one who is released to the public. And I hope that all of the people are released within the next 30 days, or at least the easier cases are all released within the next 30 days, understanding that there may be some individuals that that further security checks will be done on.
But being released in 30 days, that still means these men would have spent 6 weeks in jail. And I guess I just wonder whether this would have happened if these men had arrived by plane or, you know, say from some other country. Do you have concerns about that?
I do have concerns about it. And I think that speaks to problems within our system currently. We tend to look at anyone who arrives by a boat differently than the individuals who arrive by a plane. And there were hundreds of individuals in the past year who arrived by plane, yet they did not receive the same type of evaluation and process. I think that there are areas of the system that need to be changed, and we need to be more welcoming to people regardless of how they arrived. Part of it is because of the publicity around the individuals when they arrived, that there was a government response because of the perception that they arrived on boat that put them into a separate category. Whereas actual people arriving on a plane, there's never any publicity on it at all, and so the government standard is much lower as to the requirements that they need to be released into the public. So I do think that there needs to be changes to the system. I was in Windsor on the weekend, Windsor, Ontario, and walked past a great memorial that they have just on the border as you're looking over to the city of Detroit, and it reminds us how open and acceptable we were during the Underground Railroad days, that Canada welcomed close to 30,000 black people from the United States who were able to come across. And we didn't detain people when they arrived here at that time. We welcomed them. And certainly there was a time in our history when we advertised around the world for people to come to Canada as a place to settle. We've somehow shifted in our mentality that now anyone coming to Canada, we see them with suspicion, and we immediately want to put them aside until we're happy that the individual is going to be a upstanding, prominent member of the society or a contributing member of society. And I think we as a nation have changed in that way, and it's a sad change to see. I wish that we could go back to those days when we were more welcoming to people and had a little bit more faith in people as they arrive and didn't treat everyone suspiciously.
Todd, thanks so much for updating us on the situation of these men, and good luck with your campaign to get them out.
Thank you very much. Hopefully tomorrow we'll have good news.
Let's hope, for sure. Good night.
Thank you.
Bye. Bye-bye. We have been speaking to Todd Ross. He is with the Canadian Human Rights Voice, a human rights organization that advocates for people in Sri Lanka. We reached him in Toronto.